You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 560, recorded on Tuesday, July 13th, 2018. Yank away. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. You're really going to enjoy the show today. We are talking about the book, Eat That Frog, by productivity expert Brian Tracy. Chapters 13 and 14 are on deck, putting pressure on yourself and motivating yourself into action. Just a frank discussion about what motivates you and how you live as a servant of Jesus Christ. So you want to tune in for that. And you're really going to want to hear about Sally's pick. Do you really need to properly eject a USB drive before yanking it out? An age-old question gets answered today, so tune in for that as well. Great community feedback, a video of the week, and lots more coming right up. Welcome back, everybody, and welcome back, Sally. How are you?
Good. Happy to be joining you from a new location in the lovely state of Michigan still.
So you've moved locations in Michigan.
We did. We're nearer to family and enjoying some evening visits with our family in the area.
So how do you keep track of all this? Do you have some kind of system where you put this on a calendar? How far in advance have you got everything squared away?
You hit the nail on the head. We use a Google Calendar, and we actually share it with our family so they actually know where we're at any time. But when I make reservations, I record all the details around the campground and whether I paid for it or not and all kinds of important information in a Google Calendar. And makes it pretty simple.
So you traded your mortgage payments for a little bit more weekly or monthly activity of its own. So that must be interesting how you try and predict where you'd like to be in the future. Now, you want to get to all 50 states.
Right.
And so you have a countdown to that.
Yeah, actually, we want to worship in all 50 states. So over on MaryD.RV.com, we started a grid where we're keeping track with all the places that we worship and hope to make it to all 50 states. But someone's going to fly me to Hawaii when that day comes.
That's right, yeah. Unless you've got a duck.
Right.
Duck-enabled RV there. So I heard you had a great experience this weekend at the, I don't know if it's called the Detroit Maker Fair, but a Maker Fair. Tell us about that.
Yeah. We definitely were at the Detroit Maker Fair at the Henry Ford Museum. Spent the day Saturday there and saw more than my little brain could comprehend. So, you got to take it into consideration that we're at the Henry Ford Museum. And if anybody's ever been there, it's quite overwhelming just to see it. It's very large, has all forms of transportation and all kinds of great information to view there. But when you add on top of it a maker fair, which was basically in every single nook and cranny, every hallway, every corner that you turned inside the museum, but then filling up massive amounts of their parking lots around the museum with huge tents and activities in each. It was quite a day, and we really enjoyed ourselves. The Maker Faire is basically about sharing information about making things, and that falls into a lot of different categories. A lot of it is electronic making, so the kind of things that we've talked about on the podcast for robotics with kids and all the different manipulative type things that are coming out on the market that they can make use of. I saw demonstrations of a lot of those kind of things, as well as things related to virtual reality. And then simple things like having kids build catapults out of popsicle sticks and spoons and try to launch a ping pong ball into a set of cups that are set up, or having kids make race cars with Legos and sending them down a racetrack in competition with each other. I saw demonstrations of FIRST Robotics. So they had a full FIRST Robotics setup, like what you would see at the competitions that they have. I think the competitions are over now, but these were teams from the Detroit area that were coming in to compete, simulating what they would do in competition. So that was super cool. Something I've always wanted to attend. So it was neat to get to watch what happens when they're doing their thing. And there was just kind of everything in between. There was a huge dragon that was built from the University of Minnesota that breathed fire and was just super amazing. There was one display, a huge area of bicycles, and it was like every kind of bicycle mod you could possibly imagine. Like there was one that you pedaled backwards to go forward, and there was one that had seats and two sets of seats, but they were facing opposite directions. The handlebars were facing outward from each seat, and depending on who had control and was pedaling a certain direction, the other person was pedaling backwards and stuff. It was just crazy. It was just mind-blowing, and I loved every minute of it and just want to go make a whole bunch of stuff now. So
so did you spend one full day there, a couple days? What was
We did. It was a 2-day event, and we certainly could have gone back for a second day, but we were able to cover everything, you know, at least lightly, to see all the different displays that were there. I didn't even mention there was like pottery happening with a kiln running, you know, so people could sit down and make their own pottery.
You mentioned there was one person had a squish penny machine, but it wasn't stuff, right?
Oh yeah. There was needlework. I mean, it was just a full gamut. The squish penny machine, I was going to say, they built it themselves. And they had the pennies laying out on the table, and you just got
the ultimate,
to do it. And
right.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, it was everything. It was really, really exciting.
Very nice. So highly recommended, it sounds like.
Definitely. If you get to go to a Maker Fair, do it. These main ones are all over the country. I know they mentioned San Francisco, Kansas City, Orlando, New York, Detroit. So mainly in the summertime, they have kind of this this rotation that they do of Maker Fairs.
Very nice. All right. And worth the price of admission, it sounds like. So if one comes to your neighborhood, probably a day well spent.
Definitely. Very inspiring.
All right. So let's we probably should get into our topic. For those of you that have not been following along and you're tuning in for maybe the first time or not in a long time, we have a summer series going, as we do. So we are wont to do each summer. And usually that involves some kind of book review. And this year, Eat That Frog by an author, Brian Tracy, productivity. I don't know if I'd call him a productivity guru. He's an entrepreneur, somebody who has basically taken the time to write down what he has done to improve his productivity and then has shared that. We're up to chapters 13 and 14, kind of a short book. You're welcome to follow along. There's 21 of these tips, and chapters are very short. We're going to cover chapters 13 and 14. Like I said, put the pressure on yourself and motivate yourself into action. Initial reaction, Sally, to these chapters?
I was hoping you wouldn't necessarily ask me that, but I'm gonna be honest. I thought there was actually a lot of law here, if you want to put it in terms that we use in our Lutheran circles. And you know, law has its purpose, and so I was struck down by what he said. Put the pressure on yourself that you need to raise your bar, and that he says only 2% of people can work entirely without supervision, and those people are the leaders. So if you want to be a leader, you got a real slim chance at it. It sounds like, you know, you've really gotta work, and that's not always encouraging news, I guess.
Right. Yep. See, I felt exactly the same way. I thought there was quite a bit of humanistic thinking. You can do it. You know, there's nothing wrong with positive thinking and those kinds of things, but certainly at some point you have to recognize who you are and your purpose. And, you know, in God's world, you are not God. God is God, and you have been given a charge to work in His world, on His timetable, etc. So, but I did find some nuggets that I think are worth sharing that we can talk about, and one of them is Yeah, I think you're actually right on the first page where he said, you must choose your own frogs and then make yourself eat them in the order of importance. And that's, he's in this whole chapter, he's talking about nobody's really going to force you to do this or help you do it. Don't expect somebody to come along and kind of make everything better for you. This really is on yourself. And that is true. God asks you to be responsible and be a good steward of your time, of your talents, of your treasures. And this is something that you really need to, you know, if you're serious about your own productivity, then you really have to put skin in the game, and you're the one that has to choose the frogs and you're the one that has to eat them.
Yeah, and I think he gives you some real good tips to mentally help you psych up and get those things done. In a section titled Create Imaginary Deadlines, he gives a couple of different examples. One, imagine each day that you've just received an emergency message and that you'll have to leave town tomorrow for a month. If you have to leave for a month, what would you make absolutely sure that you get done before you left? And it made me think, you know, oftentimes if I'm preparing to go on vacation or whatever, I have a different mental attitude about the things I really want to accomplish or that need attention before I can step away from them. The more positive way, I like this one, put pressure on yourself by imagining that you just received an all-expense-paid vacation at a beautiful resort as a prize, but you'll have to leave tomorrow morning on the vacation or it'll be given to someone else. If you gave me that news, Martin, I would make sure and leave you in a good spot so that I could go on this vacation. You can count on it.
Knowing you, Sally, I know you would, yes. You probably just went through this with the sale of your house, right? Yeah, I mean, you had a closing date at which time you had to be out. You know, no ifs, ands, or buts, right?
Yeah, I actually had nightmares about that last night, actually. I was telling my sister-in-law about the process yesterday, and it brought it all back to me. You know, every time we'd get something cleared out, I'd look at another set of shelves, and there would be so much stuff. I couldn't imagine how we were going to do it, but having a hard deadline made us do it. We got a dumpster and we filled it twice and we got rid of that stuff. So one way or another. So yeah, definitely having that pressure on yourself, imaginary or real, does motivate you to get things done.
Now, physicians might say that's not such a great idea to always be, you know, deadline driven and have that built-in stress. Mm-hmm. But I think there's something healthy about it. And if you don't set deadlines, then the opposite, of course, is true, where nothing becomes a priority, and ultimately you just kind of stroll along and maybe you avoid the frogs.
Yeah, and you know, I guess one thing about this particular chapter, chapter 13, the very first analogy that he uses is people wishing for the life they want or who they could be, you know, imagining but always wishing for somebody to rescue them and make things better. And he says, these people are waiting for a bus on a street where no buses pass. If they don't take charge of their lives and put the pressure on themselves, they can end up waiting forever. And so, you know, you don't want to be that person that's waiting forever. You don't want to miss the bus. You want to achieve those things, but then the stress level and, you know, the difficulties of actually making it happen can wear on you. So,
right. Exactly. Chapter 14 was entitled Motivate Yourself into Action. And I highlighted, you know, one paragraph right away here. To keep yourself motivated, you must resolve to become a complete optimist. You must decide to respond positively to the words, actions, and reactions of the people and situations around you. You must refuse to let the unavoidable difficulties and setbacks of daily life affect your mood or emotions. And not always easy to do, but I think there's some rightness and some correctness in that kind of thinking. It's very difficult to move forward when you're thinking about the past. And I think that's maybe even a quote he talks about later on or a quote he offers later on in the chapter. But positive mental attitude is really important. And there's really not a reason for a Christian to not be positive, to be an optimist, because it's only, you know, heaven's ahead, but and then the journey toward it is, you know, promised to be you know, your constant companion. Jesus is right there too. So, I think there's value, and that's not obviously where he's coming from, but I think the concept of, you know, moving forward in a positive way is important.
However, that can be constructed as law as well. And you know, you can get this feeling that, gosh, I'm a failure at that, you know. And so you have to also couple that with the gospel that Jesus did that for us, and that we are forgiven when we aren't optimist all the time or whatever.
Yep. And then he does give, what does he call them here? Turns out that optimists have four special behaviors. Optimists look for the good in situations. Optimists always seek the valuable lesson in every setback or difficulty. And I like that one, that second one especially, because there are lessons learned. And I think in any project, and I think we talked about that in a little bit in the book we wrote a couple of years back, is, you know, you're going to fail. That's just kind of the way things work, but you have opportunity to learn from that, to take that and to move that forward, that should not frustrate you to the point where you give up or say, well, I just can't, it can't be done. You have an opportunity to do an analysis and evaluation and then circle back and get it done. Optimists, what does he say? Always look for the solution to every problem, and optimists think and talk continually about their goals. Again, getting a little bit more humanistic there, but I think his point earlier in the book was it's important to set these goals, and if you don't think about them, if you don't talk about them, if you don't revisit them, and I think other productivity conversations we've had in the past and other even Christian books that we've read do talk about, you know, setting those goals, those Christian centered goals, Christ-centered goals, and not just letting them sit there, that you have to put them in a place where you're reminded of them and revisit them and reevaluate them. And you know, I think that's important too.
Definitely. So, you know, get on top of that inner dialogue, make sure that you're talking to yourself in a positive manner, that you don't call yourself a loser all the time because you don't meet all your goals or whatever. Be optimistic with yourself and forgive yourself when you aren't, and learn from it.
Right. Moving forward. I think the, let's see, in the last, I don't know, I didn't look at the, actually the workbook section. I don't know if you had a chance to do that either. There is a workbook that goes along with this, but one of the summary sections under, he has an eat the frog section at the end. He says, resolve to make progress rather than excuses. And that's kind of a good way to think about it. You know, the ability to say, hey, I'm going to take something and move forward with it, whether it's positive or negative, is a gift that you have to try and develop. So. Anything else on these chapters, Sally, that come to mind?
No, I did review the workbook and it very closely followed exactly what we've been discussing.
I figured.
You know, it kind of just forces you to write down each of those steps. Think through, what would I have done differently? Mm-hmm. What can I learn from it? You know, and maybe that physical act of journaling the experience or whatever might be a good way for some people to go.
Yeah. And this is a little bit on my bullet journal journey, but I found that to be helpful, where that's kind of a part of the deal is kind of taking a look at something that's written down. That's kind of the therapeutic part of the bullet journal process, where you're seeing what you've done or will do written down, and then you can kind of evaluate, you know, are these frogs? Or are these just kind of little things that I'm doing just to check off the list? And how closely or how truly do they line up with the goals for whatever I had for the day, week, year, life, whatever it is? I think it's just a little bit easier once you see them in writing. So a plug for that journaling kind of concept that's helped me out so far with this.
Good, good.
Shall we move on to our picks or tips of the week, Sally? I am really looking forward to your pick, because this answers an age-old question I've had for many years. So lay it on us.
Well, I am so glad to be the sage to bring you this answer, Martin. The question being, an article from Popular Science recently, do you really need to properly eject a USB drive before yanking it out? So we've all been there, put the USB drive in, copy a file over, copy files both directions. And then do you actually right click and do the eject thing before you pull it out of the drive? And I'll just tell you, the short answer is in the byline or the secondary line title of the article. It says short answer, probably not. So you're so forgiven you if you have, okay. And it probably didn't do any damage whatsoever. So the writer actually admitted right away in the article that he never, or someone he was interviewing never, you know, properly ejects. I think it was somebody that was a PhD candidate at MIT. So that gives them credentials right there. I never do. In the last 5 years, I've never had a problem. But then he goes on to explore, you know, why this is something that might be recommended or some, you know, why does it even exist? Why do we have that nag that says properly ejected or whatever? And it basically has to do with something, I'm looking for the right term. It's a cache type of memory that is real quickly erased. It's called your write cache, W-R-I-T-E cache. And so sometimes it may report back to you that it's completed the copy when it actually put it in this temporary place and it's doing the copy behind the scenes just to speed up the process and return to you the message that it's done. It may do this process behind the scenes. So if you were to eject the drive at the millisecond that happens between the time it tells you it's done and the time it actually is done because of this write cache, you could potentially have a damaged file on the drive. And if you were to do it even more precisely at the right moment, it could scramble the whole USB device. And so there is this very minute possibility that you could damage some things if you pulled it out at the wrong time, especially if you do it right at the moment that it says it's done. I mean, if you were to like forget about it for 2 seconds and then pull it out, you're almost 100% clear. I mean, the things happen so quickly. And another point that they made in the article is that a Mac always uses the write cache. That's the way it works on a Mac. But a PC has a toggle in the settings to use it or not. And it's defaulted to not using the write cache. So on a PC device, unless you actively make the switch to use this write cache, you don't even have that introduced into the copying process when you're moving files around. So you're more likely to have a problem on a Mac in the millisecond of time that could be the issue than you would on a PC. So bottom line, I would say keep yanking them out. And I think that's what the article says. It's not a problem.
Okay.
He did say maybe be more careful if what's plugged in is a backup of your whole system onto a separate hard drive or something like that. Mm-hmm. And also be more careful if the drives involved are spinning drives instead of solid state drives. So there's more that can break, and it's a slower process to copy and paste things from drives that are spinning. And so those kind of caveats could come into play depending on what type of hardware you're dealing with.
Yep. So I'm so relieved.
Because you've been yanking them out all this time.
I've been yanking. Well, sometimes, recently, this is on a Mac, I've got it hooked up to a docking station, and attached to the docking station is a portable USB drive, which is the backup drive for Time Machine, which is what, you know, is a backup mechanism or built-in backup for Macs. And I rely on that, and I've used it a number of times over the years to get stuff back. Sometimes I've mistakenly deleted it or something got corrupted or whatever. But every time I unhook my Mac from my docking station, it gives me that message. Because I don't, I don't dismount or unmount the hard drive that's attached to the docking station because I don't even see it. It's not... it's not something that ever is, top of mind. So, and I've never had a problem. And I think, You're absolutely right, or the article was absolutely right. This used to be a much bigger problem when drives were slower and the cache was slower, where there was more write activity going on for a longer period of time. Now file systems have gotten better. They're able to chunk out pieces of files a little bit better and put them back together. And you have fewer and fewer spinning disks as well. A lot of computers that you buy today, laptops especially, don't have any spinning disks. Mm-hmm. They have all static memory, right? Solid state memory. So, well, that's good news. So.
Good. And I just want you to know, Martin, that you can learn from this experience and turn this into a positive thing. So don't be down on yourself for yanking it out.
Yeah, just, my conscience is a lot clearer right
good.
Now.
Good. Just so reiterating what Brian Tracy had to say to us today.
Right. Appreciate that. All right. My pick of the week is I haven't done much for camera picks lately. And this is a camera that I picked up a little bit ago. I had a time where I felt that I wasn't making very good use of my DSLR camera because it came with, you know, so I kind of had the whole setup. I had the focal length lenses that I wanted. I had the ones for, you know, wide angle. I had the telephoto macro lens, you know, kind of had the whole setup. And I, you know, I would go for months, sometimes even longer, without pulling them out. And I thought, boy, that's a waste. So at some point I decided, well, I'm not using these. I'm just going to sell these. So that's what I did. And I was basically using my cell phone cameras at that point, which was good enough until I thought, well, I'd like to take some nice photos on vacation or, you know, to a different event or whatever. And I thought, well, the smartphone cameras just don't have the lens reach that you might want. So I did a little bit more research and finally decided that maybe the camera that is maybe fitting that sweet spot is what they call a bridge camera. That's kind of a classification or kind of an artificial classification of cameras. But it's basically between a point and shoot and a full DSLR with interchangeable lenses. And the one, and I did a lot of research, and the one that seemed to fit the bill and was the best value was the Panasonic Lumix FZ, or they call it FZ 1000. They call it a point-and-shoot camera, but it basically looks like a DSLR. It's got a DSLR body, but it's a fixed lens, or it's got an attached lens. You can't take the lens off, which is okay because the focal length of the lens is 25 to 400, which is awesome. So you can get your wide shots and you can get your telephoto shots without having to change your lenses. Now I would say that the image quality isn't quite as good as a, you know, kind of a mid-range DSLR, but I'm not after professional quality photos, you know, at the end of the day. I'm looking for, you know, just decent photos that I can, you know, put, you know, view online for the most part or share, those kinds of things. Maybe I'll print some and put them on the wall if they're good enough. But and this camera really takes very nice photos that are perfectly suitable for an amateur like me. But in a setup that is more livable, I don't have to carry a whole camera bag. Basically, if you have the camera, you have everything that you need. So it takes, you know, at regular SD cards, you've got the full control over it, just like a DSLR. You have aperture control, shutter control, manual, 4K video even, which is kind of nice. You are limited to 30 minutes of 4K video. It has a little bit smaller sensor, but it still has 20 megapixels that it's going to capture. It has a mic jack, so if you want to do 4K video and don't want to use the onboard microphone, you can attach, you know, another, you know, higher quality microphone and get good quality out of that. Price, new, brand new. This is about a 4-year-old camera, but that kind of speaks to its staying power, that it's really highly reviewed. I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer for most people that reviewed it that this would be the best bridge camera in that category. $600 new, but you can find this used, since it's about a four-year-old camera. You can find a lot of used ones out there for under $400 and maybe even closer to $300. That's a great value for a camera that takes the quality of photos that that this one does. Panasonic's obviously been in electronics a long time and make great point-and-shoot cameras. This is obviously a little bit clunkier because it's got that DSLR body, but I think you get what you pay for here. So I would highly recommend these cameras, this category, if you don't want to kind of go up into that DSLR, you know, spend a lot of money. And you really do have to spend a decent amount of money on the lenses, especially for a DSLR, to get those really super nice photos and get the reach you need. And then you got to lug them around. You got to be careful with them. This seems to kind of bridge, quote unquote, bridge that gap between the little point and shoots that really have limited capabilities, maybe just a little bit more than a smartphone, and then the full DSLR. So it's the Panasonic Lumix FZ or FZ 1000. So if you're in the market for something like that, I would think the application here would be, you know, this would be a good unit for a congregation or a school just to have around for somebody to take pictures with. That gives you a little bit more than what your smartphone would give you to take at events or whatever, because you've got this great zoom. It's got image stabilization, takes great photos. You don't have to be real close up, and you can still get those tight shots, which is what you're looking for your website or social media or whatever. So that's my pick of the week.
Good stuff. We'll have to see some pictures from it sometime to see the results. So.
I'm going to be taking pictures at the Brewer game, Wells Night at the Brewer game this Friday. I got roped in. Actually, got roped into that, so I get to go on the field.
Wow.
And take first pitch photos of Vice President Voss, who's going to be throwing out the first pitch representing Wells, and do a little bit of that. So that'd be fun.
Very exciting. Yeah, we'll definitely look for those photos next week.
So you're still using your DSLR? You had a Nikon, as I recall, right?
I do, and I've taken it out for the special places we've been. Like, I took it with me to the Creation Museum and the Ark, and then took it with me to the Maker Faire, shot about 150 pictures at the Maker Faire, and was really pleased with the quality. So, yeah, I don't like lugging it around that much. Actually, I should say Kevin probably doesn't like lugging it around that much. We have a nice, a really nice backpack for that, but it does get warm and heavy when you're there
the summer,
all day long and
especially.
Walking a lot.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's move right along to our community feedback.
Yeah, and I'm super excited to share this today because we had some community feedback from a pastor in Malmy, Ohio, which is a suburb of Toledo. It's Pastor Peter Hagen, and he is writing to us in regard to one of our seminary presentations. We interviewed some SIM students that were graduating this spring, and their final big presentations that they did as part of their capstone effort there at SIM. And one of them was Bill Schubert, seminarian, now pastor Bill Schubert, who presented on, I'm looking for the title of his, on episode 548, we talked to him, and the title of his essay was The Importance of Impacting iGen, Ministering to Generation Z Through Websites and Social Media. And Pastor Hagen wrote last week and said, your Wells Tech episode 548 provided some inspiration for a community seminar. They contacted their nearby WLCFS, Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Services counselor, who agreed to speak on the topic. And they are doing pre-registration through Eventbrite. So check out our show notes to see a link. What they're presenting is called iGen, iSAD, question mark. It's a Saturday seminar about tweens, technology, and mental health. So yeah, cool title. They're doing it in October. And like I said, they're using Eventbrite for registrations and have a little description there. It says, according to the latest research, iGen, toddlers, tweens, teens, early 20-somethings are on the verge of the biggest mental health crisis in the history of the world. Parents today face complex challenges that previous generations never had. Cyberbullying, blue light induced insomnia, Snapchat, screen time in school and at home. So again, they brought in Kent Robinson from WLCFS to speak on that, and they're willing to bring him back for others. They're going to try some serious community advertisement, inviting people in, which I think this topic will be a real of real interest to lots of parents and educators in the area. So they're looking to get some newspaper coverage, possibly do some billboards and things like that to really talk it up. So great outreach activity just to get people into your church and familiar with you and make some friendships and things like that. So I think there's definitely a win-win for people learning this great information and then also just getting acquainted with your congregation. So excited to hear how it goes, and really happy that Pastor Hagen took the time to share that with us. He says, in a follow-up email, he said he had been doing his professional development for the year, which included Wells Tech and Reading Time and Wheaties, and he's done well on everything but the Wheaties. So eat your Wheaties, Pastor, and keep listening to Wells Tech. We appreciate your feedback very much.
Awesome, Peter. Yeah, thanks for it. Wonderful. We will look forward to hear how that goes. Mm-hmm. I think that's it for community feedback. If you'd like to contribute, it's very easy to do. Go to our show notes page, as Sally mentioned. Go to wellstech.wells.net. And you, across the top, you see all of our social media locations. Just click on something that looks familiar. And you can, or hashtag WellsTech, and lots of people over the years have offered great feedback, and I think that's one of the best parts of the show is hearing from our listeners. You can also send us an email if that's your style, wellstech@wells.net. Easy way to get in touch with us. So please do that. Sally, video of the week?
We do have a great video to share. It is a recap video of the recent Wells 2018 Youth Rally that was held at Bowling Green University June 26th through 29th. So if you were able to be there, if you weren't able to be there, you're going to love seeing and feeling the vibe of the event through this video. It's about 3.5 minutes long and really exciting to see the things that happened there at Youth Rally. I have never had the privilege of attending a youth rally, and I'm really sad I missed out on it as a youth because it looks like a really exciting event.
They do an awesome job.
Definitely.
They really do. So, all right. So check out that video. Coming up next week, we are going to continue our series on Eat That Frog from Brian Tracy. Sally, you note here, it's the week we've been waiting for. Why
Finally.
So?
Finally, because we have two chapters that focus on technology. At least
technology.
They have technology in the title. One is Technology is a Terrible Master, and the other is Technology is a Wonderful Servant. And that fits right in line with our mantras from Wells Tech, where we definitely like the idea of technology serving you in the ministries that are important to you.
All right. It's neat that those two chapters actually kind of wound up going together on the show. Mm-hmm. So good. Very good. So tune in next week for that. Love that you joined us. Please bring a friend. We're really happy that you decided to give us a little bit of your time this week and hope you would do that again. Do us the honor next week as well. Until then, God's blessings. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.